This is Armand DeMille with you with the Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. Bringing you ideas, concepts, guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. Thoughts, you know, concepts, a belief. What is it that makes you the most crazy? Now, when I say the word crazy, of course, as a psychotherapist, I'm saying the word crazy, but I mean it the way people mean it. You know, makes you nuts in your brain, drives you just beside yourself. It's such an interesting expression. He was beside himself. It's almost as if you were there, but you were really watching somebody else function, and this other person is beside you. Did you ever feel that way? Do you ever hear yourself yelling at your kids, saying to yourself, I'm besides myself? Meaning, that's myself doing the screaming, but I'm not there. Having a fight with somebody you love, being mean to someone, you're beside yourself. You're not yourself. And then people say that later. They say that to each other. You know, I'm sorry, I was not myself. So there's a self that observes, and there's another self that behaves. We're going to look at that today. One of the things we want to look at is what makes people the most unhappy. So if you think about what makes people really unhappy besides real tragedy and loss, well, there are two things that we could look at. One is feelings, emotions, stuff you could sense in your body. Let's talk about feelings. There's body feelings, illness, having a cold, fatigue, anxiety, stress, tension. Now, those are the things, you could talk about those as emotional, but the physical problems just drag you down. You have the flu, it's hard to be well-spirited. There's a thing I learned a long time ago. I was doing some work with somebody and who was under hypnosis. And under hypnosis, I spoke to a person who was empty, very depressed. And I asked that person, where is your spirit? And she said to me, my spirit left. So I asked, can I speak to the spirit? And strangely enough, this is work I used to do with multiple personalities. I was able to speak with the spirit. And I said to the spirit, where'd you go? Why'd you leave? And the spirit said to me, of course, this is the other person's voice. The other person is talking to me, and maybe it was the spirit, or maybe it was just their imagination of a spirit. The spirit says to me, whenever somebody gets sick, I leave. I don't want to be in a sick body, because a sick body will disassemble me. I thought that was an interesting choice of words. And somehow I was learning a secret here, because if I thought about it, how many people seem, when they're depressed, that they've lost their spirit? After that, whenever I would see somebody who was physically ill, I would ask myself the question, do they or do they not still have their spirit? Now, you all know what I'm talking about, because you've been with people who have gotten past the point of being spirited. There's someone I know who was dying, was over 100 years old, who had her spirit right up until the end. Right? Spirit was there, spirit was there, spirit was there. In Hebrew, there's a word called neshuma, or neshuma, pardon me if I'm pronouncing it wrong, which kind of means breath and spirit at the same time. And according to my understanding, when you die, you breathe your last breath, and in that last breath, you lose your spirit during that very time. Well, I think people lose their spirit before then. Now, what do I mean by spirit? Am I talking about a saint that's inside you, your soul? Or I don't know. I don't know. But let's say that you do have a spirit, and some people are spirited and some people are not. And depressed people seem to lose their spirit. So on the physical level, if you are physically sick, there are certain diseases, certain ailments, where the spirit just disappears. And if you run all the way down, if you get really physically ill, sometimes your spirit leaves. Now, another thing I learned is once a person is in serious care, you know, the end of life, Morphine is an exit of the spirit. If you put morphine in a body, and this is such an interesting thing, it seems to mimic the endorphins. So morphine is like a, you know, it mimics the endorphins. The endorphins, which may be all that the spirit is, leave the body. Now, this person, once they see morphine, or every person, whenever they see morphine or any of the other morphine-like substances, they kind of get high on the morphine, but it's like an artificial spirit. And once that's in the body, the real spirit seems to leave. So when people are preparing to die, you give them morphine to take away the pain. But part of the reason that doctors are reluctant to introduce morphine is they know it's the end of the road. And it's the end. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. So what makes people really unhappy? Physical illness will do it to you. It's murder. Having something broken, being broken. Some people keep their spirits even when they're broken. I worked at an institution with quadriplegics and paraplegics. People without arms and legs and things blown off during the war. And they were highly spirited. They were getting along just fine. They were there. It was a rehab center. They wanted to get better. They wanted to function. But spirit is in rehab. You can't have rehabilitation without spirit. It must be there. Something must be saying, I want to get better. I want to live. Physical illness can drag you down. Now, there are physical problems that need physical cures. And if you've done all that, if you've cleaned up your diet, you've done your exercise, you did all the right things, and you feel unhappy anyway, you've got to look at something else. You've got to look at your mind. Your mind, and actually not just your mind, but the way you think, may be the answer. The actual process of your thinking. One of the great barometers of the way your mind is working is stress and stress levels. If you've done a lot of physical self-care and you still feel stress, then there's something about your attitude that you have to look at. Now, stress can be caused by working too hard, or stress can be caused by different situations. But stress is mainly caused by the way we think. It's the stress that you put on yourself that makes your heart go funny. And very often that stress comes just from the way you think, the way you perceive things, the funny way you think. I saw a woman for a consultation this week who really believes that all women are jealous of her. Now that's called funny thinking. I'm going to use this word funny thinking quite a bit. Because to believe that all women get jealous of you does a funny thing to you. It alienates you from the potential of having friends. It makes you feel totally dependent on the opposite sex. If you're a woman and you believe all women are jealous of you, then you're totally dependent on men. It makes relationship with men critically important because without them you have nobody but the enemy. Other women. And you can make yourself crazy being so desperate. Living in a world where you have to watch out for every woman who would want to hurt you because you believe they're all jealous. It's just an example. So today, I've gathered for you some of the funny ways that people think. We're going to look at a number of beliefs that create and sustain emotional disturbance. I'm going to focus on funny thinking. Funny thinking. That should be the name of today's program. You see, as a therapist, one of my jobs is to help people sort out what it is they do with their minds that makes their lives unhappy. Why do you love people who are out of reach? Why do you worry so much? Why do you so badly need to be loved? And why can't you raise your voice in defense of yourself? Funny, irrational thoughts that leave you with frantic, obsessive preoccupation. Like looking as old as you are is bad. You should always strive to look as young as possible. Now, this includes plastic surgery, bulimia, excessive makeup, hair club for men, hair weaving, a lot of the stuff that will make you nutty, going to the gym and making sure that you look young, because age is bad. Sure, you want to take care of yourself so that you can lead a healthier, more vibrant life, but to get obsessed about wrinkles, fear your birthday, color your hair, lie about your age, that could leave you spinning. And that's our subject for today. Funny thinking. The way your mind works that causes you grief and irrational thinking. For a good outline of the different common irrational thoughts, I went to some of those outlined by rational emotive therapy, which is a form of therapy that's been helpful in concept. I've used some of the ideas. RET, as it's called, has a good outline of the different belief systems that can create and perpetuate mental distress. They believe that certain core irrational ideas, which have been clinically observed, are at the root of most emotional disturbance. So I put together a list of some 20 items, as well as my own observations. And here are the funny thinking that makes people crazy. Number one, the idea that it's a dire necessity for an adult to be loved for everything that they do. This will get you in trouble for sure. You see, the idea in life is that you have to meet with your own approval. That's the judge that counts, not other people judge. So if you are, see yourself as 90% okay and 10% not okay, well, the 10% doesn't wipe out the 90%. You're, as I said earlier, beside yourself. But the idea that someone has to love you for everything you do, including all of your belches or whatever else that you might bring up, that's a funny thinking idea. If that's true, then you have to be afraid to not, you have to be terrified of passing gas. You have to be terrible that somebody may see you naked. That'll make you funny. The idea is to concentrate on your own self-respect. And as to needing to be loved for who you are, believe me, it's a futile pursuit. Because not everybody, nobody's going to love every part of you. Because there's got to be some part of you that gets through life that is not as nice. Live a life where you can love yourself and other people's approval will not be as essential. Oh, it's nice to be appreciated, but needing approval for your sense of well-being will definitely mess you up. Number two in our list of funny thinking. The idea that it would be horrible when things are not the way you would like them to be. Instead of the idea that it's too bad, that one would better try to change or control conditions so they have more satisfactory or better accept the existence of whatever thing may be against you. That's okay. It was a very funny thing happened about a month ago. About a month ago, I had this 1 week period where everything I tried to do had a satisfactory positive outcome. Anything I tried to do. I went to a grocery store. And I went to a store that was selling grapes, and I wanted to get the grapes at that store because they had just come in. But I thought they were going to be sold out. I walked in, there were the grapes for sale, exactly what I wanted. I was driving a car, I went to a gas station, there was nobody online. I got my gas easily, right? I had a number of things happen at my office, everything clicked into place, as it very often does here. But everything that could go right did go right. And anything that could go wrong did not go wrong. It was such a funny week. I felt like I had an angel on my shoulder. No matter what I did, it turned out well. The following week, a funny thing happened. Anything that could go wrong did go wrong, but it was easily corrected. In other words, solutions were really simple. No matter what I had, a problem would come up. I would see the problem, and I said, okay, I'll deal with this problem. And I dealt with this problem, and it worked very efficiently, very effectively. The third week, I wonder if it has to do with the moon. The third week, anything that could go wrong did go wrong, and any correction I tried to make didn't work. I tried to reach people on the phone. They weren't there to be reached. I tried to do a number of things. It didn't work. And I had these three consecutive weeks. Luckily, I'm back to week one, when nothing seems to be going wrong. But even, you know, some of you have even heard it on the radio program, and WBAI, something that couldn't possibly go wrong, suddenly goes wrong. It could be mechanical. So the idea that horrible things happen, you know, it's not really such a horrible thing. Here's where the religious people have an advantage. They can always fall back on it's the Lord's way. So when we have to make the best of it, the trouble with the belief of divine intervention is that it sometimes leads you to inaction. But sometimes you could just say to yourself, you know, that's the way God willed it. And a lot of people get by on that. I once counseled a woman from South Jersey, a lovely soul who'd done all the deepest spiritual work on herself to try to keep herself at calm and at peace. So she goes to workshops, she does yoga, she does meditation, she does a course of miracles, a strict vegetarian, volunteers at times, lives like Mother Teresa, making personal sacrifices all the time. A nice, very nice person in her 60s. But she was fired from a job to be replaced by a younger woman, has been treated unfairly by quite a few people, and she's unable to raise a hand in her old defense. So every time she gets stepped on, she retreats to her spiritual practice. She goes back and says, well, this is, you know, I've just got to accept it, I've got to accept it. So I checked out her inability to fend for herself, and I found that internally she has spent her whole life defeating her right to get angry. She did a self-angerectomy, and whenever she feels a sense of injustice, she goes to the spiritually oriented advisors and spiritual practices, most of which teach her acceptance. So this leads her to her next funny thinking. She could not defend herself. She couldn't take care of herself. I met with someone else recently who was grieving, and she was grieving because her mother died as a result of, not as a result of anything, the mother was 104 years old. The mother died, and she was blaming herself for this death. And what I realized is she had called a physician, told the physician about her mother's condition. The physician said, take your mother to the emergency room. She took her mother to an emergency room. The emergency room did not do very well for the mother. The mother got sicker. Mother went home and died, and she said to herself, why did I take her to the emergency room? I knew I shouldn't have done it. What was happening was she was angry at the doctor. She was angry at the physician because the physician didn't say, bring her over to my office. She was angry at that physician for a number of things, and then she was angry at a lot of people. As soon as the mother died, people, neighbors came in and raided the house. They took the dishes and they took things away, and they said, oh, your mother would have wanted me to have these. And they just kind of raided them. They kind of cleaned the lady out, and she had no ability to get angry. Instead, what she did have was a spiritual practice, acceptance. So what happened as a result of her getting angry, she was angry, but she wasn't allowed to get angry because early on she learned to be spiritual. And so she took her own ability to react and she turned it against herself. Now she blamed herself for getting angry, which leads to the idea that human misery is only caused by the inside of you, that it's all your fault. No, my friends, it's not your fault. It's not the way it's meant to be. It's okay to get angry. It's okay to sometimes look on the outside. But then there's the other side of it. The other side of it is that all of my misery is caused and is forced on by somebody on the outside. That's the blaming thing I was talking about. The other people in the external events may be miserable, but emotional disturbance is caused by the view that one takes of conditions, you know, it's the way you see it. As you've heard many times before, bad events can be either tragic or they can be viewed as challenges. In the case of the lady I was talking about, her being fired was yet another opportunity for her to face her anger. And instead of forgiving, once again, supplicating, once again, it's time for her to fight for herself. Say, okay, now wait, get to the point where she was angry. Her depression lifted. Which leads us to our next bit of funny thinking. Fourth in my list of thoughts and beliefs that cause emotional disturbance and perpetuate emotional distress is that the idea that if something is or may be dangerous or fearsome, one should be terribly upset about it. Hysterical people like to defend their overreactions as feeling my feelings, they like to say. It's like if it's preferable to overreact to things. They're saying if I have a reaction and I have an overreaction, that means it must be something wrong. See, that's funny thinking, because you may have an aversion based on something. Sometimes it's best to step towards that which you fear the most. It's like it's preferable to overreact to things. Now, I'm not saying you don't have a right to overreact. Of course you do. And certainly, I don't believe that repressing your emotions is any way to live. Because if you did that, you could never really feel the beauty of deep loving. But if you overreact, you overreact. And you must know you overreact. And somewhere in the back of your mind, you should be saying, I tend to overreact, and I know it. I can see how terribly upset I am right now. I'd like to find a place inside me that could look at the situation with more balance. And maybe you can't this time, but at least know that you're overreacting and know that overreacting is not the way to mental health. In fact, overreacting is just a signal best to calm down. Unless, of course, you're one of those people who live like doormats, getting stepped on all the time. Then learning to respond, even if it means overreacting, maybe on the road to mental health. But if you're one of those people who always overreact, continue to do so is not developing the mind. Instead, it's just running the same old program, digging the groove a little deeper. And one of the things that happen when you keep overreacting is people begin reacting to you by defending themselves. They just kind of want to get out of the way. And now everybody lies to you. Now nobody wants you to be upset. Don't get upset, don't get upset. And you develop a power in upsetting people. And that leads to more funny thinking. So item 4 of funny thinking is the idea that if something is or may be dangerous or fearsome, one should be terribly upset about it. One should be being consumed by jealousy is an example of this. Being consumed by jealousy. I mean, have you ever been consumed by jealousy? What a thing. I mean, there you're really not in your right mind, right? Jealousy. Somebody else shows up with something and they look more attractive and they have something or they're preferred by somebody else. You can be consumed by this. Consumed by jealousy. It could take you over. Now, if you're consumed by jealousy, then it means you're living in fear. I would call jealousy a phobia. And if jealousy is a phobia, get it fixed. Because no one should live that way. I mean, living that way is just going to make you miserable your whole life. It's going to be looking at who is preferred over you. For what reason? And it always has its roots in childhood. But once you straighten it out, it becomes different. Because once you straighten out that bug of having to be always being jealous of someone else, and you get that out of your way, you become a much more powerful person. Then you have more availability of friends in the world. This is Armand DeMille bringing you a list of irrational thoughts, belief systems that create and perpetuate mental disturbance. So far we've covered a few. Number one, the idea that it's just a dire necessity for an adult to be loved for everything they do. That's item one. Item two was the idea that it's horrible when things are not the way you want them to be. Number three, the idea that human misery is externally caused or only internally caused. Either one. Either blame yourself or blame somebody else. The blame doesn't work. Number four, the idea that if something is or may be dangerous or fearsome, you should be terribly upset about it. Next on our list of dysfunctional thought patterns is the idea that it is easier to avoid than to face life difficulty and self-responsibilities. Instead of the knowledge that the so-called easy way is invariably the much harder way in the long run. Avoiding dealing with life's difficulties and self-responsibilities. Are you married to someone who you're always trying to please, even if it's at the expense of giving up things that are precious to you? Husbands, wives, make yourself known to your partner. Otherwise, one of you is going to find someone else to have a relationship with whom you could be who you really are, or who you think you really are. Make yourself known. I think that should be part of a commitment in a relationship. I was talking to a man earlier today who said to himself he's got out of a miserable marriage. He was very unhappy. And all he wants at this point is to be honest, to be in an honest relationship with someone who is honest back. And he presents himself in a truly honest way. He shows himself. Now, he's getting kicked around all over the place because people are looking at him and thinking, well, this guy is an innocent. And so people lie to him in return to his, in response to his innocence. And he's learning, but he's maintaining his innocence. He says, I want to be in an honest relationship and I won't settle for anything less. So if you're in a marriage, if you're in a relationship, speak to your partner. Show your partner who you really are. Even if it means that you're not sexually satisfied with your partner, talk about it. Do something about it, which could include having permission to step outside the marriage. But before you do, if at all possible, friends, try to work it out while you're at home. Every time someone who's having an affair consults with me, they present the picture of having a perfect spouse. They always say, my wife is an angel, my wife is a saint. That's what they usually say, but what they don't say is that their wife's niceness makes them unable to confront their niceness, their wives, about things that are important to them. So they never get angry at their mates, but they certainly act it out. Now, to have a real relationship with only one person, you have to be able to deal with the issues with that person. Otherwise, you're just playing married. And then you get stuck in there and then you say, oh, I'm in here for the children's sake. So it winds up in that same pattern of not taking on life's difficulties because you want to avoid them. Number 6 in the idea of ideas that will make you crazy is the idea that one needs something other or stronger or greater than oneself on which to rely. Instead of the idea that it's better to take the risks of thinking and acting independently, even if you don't do it well. You can't get very far in a relationship if you put the burden on the other person of having to live your life and their own life as well. The other person will not tolerate it forever. They will start dreaming of being free of the burden of you. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We're talking about funny thinking. We're going to take a short break. And when we come back from our break, we're going to continue with this idea.
I remember when I lost my mind. There was something so pleasant about that place. Even your emotions have an echo in so much space. And when you're out there without care, yeah, I was out of touch. But it wasn't because I didn't know enough. I just knew too much.
I can die when I'm done.
Armand DeMille with you, back from the break. Listen, my friends, we're talking about funny thinking. We're talking about the kind of thinking that gets you in trouble, the way that people pattern their minds. Now, understand this about human survival. Every one of you as a child learned that your original emotions, the original things you felt, were not convenient to the people who were in charge. Children resent having to go to sleep at night. They resent school desks. They resent certain things. There are things that you just don't like as a child. Why would you? But you learn that certain parts of you are unacceptable, like you're not allowed to have temper tantrums, right? You're not allowed to scream. You're not allowed to throw your food on the floor when you don't like it. You're not allowed to spit it out. You learn to swallow that which you don't want to swallow. Now, that's quite symbolic. And what happens is you take your feelings and you bury your feelings and you develop ways of thinking like, mommy will love me if I eat this pablum. And you wind up eventually learning a whole bunch of rules for your mind that are ways of thinking that you think will get you through. And what are the ways of thinking that will get you through? The ways of thinking that will get you through are those that will get you loved. You wonder to yourself, maybe I should just be giving all the time. If I serve all the time, I'll be loved. Maybe I'll be a performer. Maybe I'll be somebody who just dances and sings and smiles, and I am a performer, and people will love me that way. No, maybe I'll be a tragic soul who everybody feels sorry for, and I'll just always be in some kind of despair, and I'll have people come over and love me that way. No, here's another way. Maybe I'll be alone, aloneness, and I won't let anybody in, and I'll be an isolate. And that way I'll get loved by myself and not even risk being loved by somebody else. Oh, no, there's another way. How about I'll just be afraid and I'll keep working all the time and I'll just try over and over again to try to get people to love me? Or no, better than that, I'll just spread myself out. I'm going to get people to love me by spreading myself thin. I'll get 10 people to love me and I'll get 12 people to love me and I'll try it in every language, in every direction, and I'll... No, if that doesn't work, okay, then here's the other way I'm going to get loved. I'm going to control people. I'm going to control people, and I'm going to make them love me. No, if that doesn't work, then I'll try this other way, which is I'm going to go to sleep. I'm going to bond with people. I'm going to meet people, and I'm going to glom onto them. What a good word. I'm going to clump with them. I'm going to be with them, and we're going to become one, and we're going to join, and we'll become a union, and they're going to become so strongly attached to me that they'll never leave me. That's the way I'm going to love them. These are all strategies for trying to be loved. And out of those strategies come thoughts. And what we're going over are some of the thoughts that don't work. Here's a thought: the idea that one should be thoroughly competent, intelligent, and achieving in all possible respects, instead of accepting oneself as a quiet, imperfect creature with general human limitations and specific fallibilities. But the idea of being a perfectionist, that whole idea of having to be perfect, is another bit of funny thinking. It'll kill you. Number 8 on our list of ideas that make you somehow wacky. The idea that because something once strongly affected one's life, it should indefinitely affect it. Now, I know somebody who has had early trauma experience, and it was with vermin. This person believes you're not allowed to say the word mouse in front of it. If you say the word mouse, now get this, with computers, you're not allowed to say the word mouse. And she's a very competent, strong lady, but any word related to vermin, right, mouse specifically, sends a panic through her. But she commands everybody to follow her and never use that word. And people, for some reason or other, because she's a powerful lady, do exactly what she says. So what she has done is she's affirmed her belief. She's made herself more ill by doing that. If somebody has a If something was strongly affected by someone, it should not indefinitely affect you. Instead of the idea that one can learn from past experiences but not be overly attached to or prejudiced by them. Post-traumatic stress disorder is about the idea that something has happened and it affects you in the future at another time. Once it's affecting you, you get over it. Number 10 in our list of ideas is that one must have certain and perfect control over things. Now, you know, control is such a funny word. It's like, can you control the river? Well, we try to, right? We build dams, we build bridges, we do what we can. But can you control everything? Can you control the flow of things? Can you control the viruses? I know a couple of people who try really hard. I know a man who's a health expert, lives in an apartment in Manhattan with rarefied air. He has it cleaned up. He has it air conditioned. He has it filtered. The air is exactly the air he wants to breathe. His water is triple filtered. His food is all organic, only brought in from organic places. He has 7 locks on his door, so nobody can get in. He's in control. In fact, he's so much in control that when you go to his place, and I visited him, he's a professional, he sits on a chair above everybody else's chair. And this is the way he lives. And he's in control. He likes to control things. He does. It's always about controlling the environment. I like to control things. I do control things. I control a lot of things. I control when I drive. I run a big institution. I have a whole bunch of things. Control is nice. But having to control and being afraid of being out of control, that'll make you crazy. Number 11 on the ideas that human happiness can ever be achieved by inertia or inaction. Instead of the idea that humans tend to be happiest when they are vitally absorbed in creative pursuits, or when they're devoting themselves to people or projects outside themselves, the belief that you could ever achieve happiness by just sitting still, inertia, inaction. The body's not built that way. It likes to grow. In the human body, there are only 2 options for the cells. They're either growing or they're dying, and every cell in your body wants to grow. Inertia is dying. You know what I mean. Many of you who are stuck in the mud feel like you're dying. Okay, number 12. In my list of things that are funny thinking that make you get crazier by thinking that way. The idea that certain acts are awful or wicked, and that people who perform such acts should be severely punished. Instead of the idea that certain acts are inappropriate, antisocial, and the people who perform such acts are behaving badly, ignorantly, neurotically, and we'd be better if someone helped them to change. Instead, we want to punish and eliminate them. We want to execute them. We want to kill them. We want to shoot them. People are not evil. People behave in an evil way. A psychopath could be evil in their own way because they have no shame and no guilt. They could do something. They could hurt people. They're still people. They're still humans. See, judging people is very tough. If you judge people as evil who do certain things, if you judge the people as wicked or intrinsically bad, then when do you do something that doesn't reflect your higher self, you'll see yourself as bad too. So then you are going to be that strongly against yourself. There are people out there who think the WBAI is an evil empire. There are folks who live by the belief that certain behaviors are punishable, that talking against the political system is evil and wrong. Like it's okay to spray paint on people who wear fur coats. Not just the coats, but the people in the coats. They think it's okay. Yes, I'll spray paint on them. It's okay to hate the president. It's okay to try to destroy something. Does your perception of the crookedness of our political system lead you to wishing harm on the people who are so unlike you because they are evil? I remember the days of George Bush, and I remember people who wanted him killed. They wished he was dead, which would have left us with Cheney or someone else like that. And I would listen to them, and I would say to them, I would talk to these people, and these, some of these were people who were strongly committed. I'd say, would you really want them dead? Do you want to see them die? Yes, I want to see them dead because they're evil people. Not me. I don't want to see people dead. Now, although I think, you know, death might be a nice journey for some people, I don't want to kill people. Does your perception of the crookedness lead you to this belief? Do you stay focused on what's wrong? If you think that way, then you better join the Ku Klux Klan, because that's how they think. You know, they think, oh, we got to get rid of these evil people because they're not the right color, they're not the right shape. So among the thoughts of things that make people feel and think funny and get funny, number 12, that you're special. And people must recognize and acknowledge that specialness. Now, this leads me to a very interesting thought. The need to be special. What an interesting concept. The need to be perceived. Nobody likes to be invisible. And in many ways, we are. You know, nobody would notice me if I didn't open my voice. I mean, I look like, well, I guess I don't look like an average person. But if I went to a grocery store, if I went to a supermarket, nobody might notice me. Of course, somebody may say, I know that voice. But mostly, we are invisible. Why should you be noticed? Well, some people do everything they can to be noticed. If you live where I live and you look outside at the subway, you see people dancing by with such incredible costumes to be noticed. Look at my hair. Look at my tats. You know, look at my markings on my body. Look at the way I've kind of designed myself. Look at my piercings. Look at the color, look at my legs, look at my arms, look at my torso, look at me, look at me, look at me. Notice me, please recognize me as being special. Now, if you're one of those people who get furious with waiters and waitresses, you're in this group. The need to be perceived as special is an illness that will cost you a fortune in things that look good for appearance sake. To have to be in the best of anything. You know, people see it coming. When you're an image-driven person, when you're a person who is driven by having to be the best and having to be noticed, you're on your way to a real problem. Now, here's another thought for you. Do you ever wonder, why are people paranoid? It's a very interesting question. Why do some people get paranoid and some people don't? Interesting question. What I discovered, which is not part of what you'll find in most of the literature, is that people who are paranoid have one very strong need and one great fear. And their great fear is that they will become invisible. A paranoid person does a thing. Just think about what paranoia is. Paranoia is projecting that there are people who wish to harm you. See, and when you're paranoid, you believe that somebody wants to hurt you. And you're projecting in your mind that the neighbor upstairs is walking on their carpet extra loud to get angry at you. That people are putting things under your doorway to try to get, because they're trying to get at you. Real paranoia. We're not talking about minor paranoia. We're talking about delusionary paranoia, where a person imagines that people want to hurt them. What does that do for that person? Why would a person want to live with that terror, with that fear? Why? The reason being, it makes them important to somebody. See, if you're paranoid, then you're saying to yourself, I'm important to somebody else. Somebody finds me important. That's why they want to hurt me. Whereas if you're not paranoid, then you're invisible. Cellophane. So getting people, instead of living for recognition and admiration, see if there's any way you can be solid in yourself. Otherwise, you'll be dependent for the rest of your life on other people's approval. Now, there are two, let me give you two resources here. There's a series of programs we did on the drama of the gifted child, which are available on our archives, which are great. They're free. Great information. Listen to that. It'll help you with this. Here are a number of other funny thinking things that I'm going to end up with. Number one, you're nobody till somebody loves you. That's not true. You're somebody whether somebody loves you or not. You're even somebody if you don't love yourself. I mean, I'll love you, you know, and I do. It doesn't make you insignificant. And there are certain people who believe that they have their better half that they have to meet. And that somewhere in life, they're going to find their other half. And until they do, they're nothing. They're half a person. That's funny thinking. Second one, you can't love anybody if you don't love yourself. That's not true also. There's a lot of people who don't love themselves who do love other people. This is actually number 15 on our list. Funny thinking, life is meaningless. Your life is meaningless. Now, these are the words of a depressed person. A depressed person looks at their life and always says the same thing. It all means nothing, and I mean nothing. If it weren't so said so often, if I haven't heard it from every depressed person I ever met, I would almost believe it, because in a funny way, life is meaningless. Life may be meaningless. So what does it mean? You know, we're walking along this planet. Here I am. I live my normal 100 years like everybody else does, and I've spent my 100 years on the planet, and now I'm gone. And so people say, oh, he used to do a great radio show. But what does it mean in the whole thing of things? Not much, but that doesn't stop me from having a good time. Life may be meaningless, but that could be the fun of it. Or might have great meaning. Viktor Frankl wrote a wonderful book called The Search for Meaning. And in his book, he talked about how it was so significant and so important for you to find a meaning for your life. Well, I think the real answer is not to find a meaning, but to feel a meaning. And one of the most beautiful gifts that we are given is our ability to feel love. What is love? I don't mean to feel romantic love, but I mean to feel the total acceptance of other human beings for exactly what they are. The idea, funny thinking, number 16, everybody is unhappy. Every couple is unhappy. That perception, well, that may be true. Every couple I know, I'd say about 90% of the couples I know, are unhappy after a certain period of time with each other. But they're not unhappy because they have the bond. See, the bond is worth more than the unhappiness that they're feeling at any given moment. So the fact that we, from the inside, if you're single and you look and you say, but everybody's unhappy, that's not true. People are not mostly unhappy, just the people you know. Find new friends. Every couple is unhappy, yes, but don't forget the bonding. And then the last funny thought is, okay, everybody's happy but me. See, now that happens especially around holiday time, around Christmas time. That's a big deal. When you look around and you hear the Christmas bells and you see the people buying presents, people get so deeply depressed because they believe everybody else is happy except you. That's not true either. Last in my list, women can't be trusted. Men can't be trusted. The opposite sex can't be trusted. What does it mean? Are they to be trusted? Are they to be trusted? Is it because someone is of the opposite sex, they're going to have some sexual designs, one way or another, that you should keep in mind? So many millions of years ago, women learned that the only way to keep the species alive, which you'll find in the series I did on human sexuality, was to in some way hide when you're available for sex, not let the men know when you're available to sex, which is part of the evolutionary conundrum. So one of the things we did was we played this little game of I'll hide it and you'll try to find it. Now, if I'm hiding something and you're trying to find something, or vice versa, then you can never trust where it is because you're supposed to look for it. So the truth of it is human sexuality is filled with deception, but it doesn't mean people can't be trusted. So this is my list of things, my friend, that lead you to a very possible consideration. Thinking, what busy minds you have. Did you ever lay with somebody and watch them thinking And you wonder after making love with them and you look at them and you see them looking off into space and you see them blinking their eyes and you say, what are they thinking? Where could their mind be at this time? How much thinking do people do? So thinking will make you funny. Now, feeling, of course, we talked about feelings. Feelings are great, but people try to identify feelings and they give them words. And really, but they're not talking about feelings. They're talking about thoughts. And thinking funny leads you to funny feelings. So if you review this, if you go back, if you listen to it, I hope that it's been helpful to you. These are my 16 thoughts of funny, 18 thoughts of funny thinking that people do. And they take these feelings lead them either with the following feelings. Now, remember, if you ever want to identify your feelings, sad, mad, bad, glad, or scared. There are 5 feelings. Sad, mad, glad, bad, or scared. Write that down. Sad, mad, bad, glad, or scared. If you want to ask yourself what you're feeling at any given time, don't try to give any one of these feelings 100%. Give them a percentage. I could be 5% angry, 5% mad, 10% glad, happy to be angry, 4% sad. And just do it that way. And so you make up your own combination of feelings so that you could identify them. But if you ask yourself that question 3 times a day, what am I feeling? Just from the mood of it, from the mood, not the thoughts, and you identify it, you'll find that your mind races a lot less, and it goes into a lot less funny places. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. We'll be back with you soon, Tuesdays and Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Hope you found this useful. If you want to send me an email, I would love to receive one, armand@thepositivemind.com. I look forward to being with you again, my friends. One day, people will touch and talk, perhaps easily, and loving will be as natural as breathing and as warm as sunlight. And people will untie themselves like a string is unknotted. They'll unfold and they'll yawn and they'll stretch and they'll spread their fingers. They'll unfurl like seaweed returning to the sea. And work will be simple and swift, like a seagull flying. And play will be casual and quiet, as that same seagull is settling. And the clocks will stop. And no one will wonder or care or even notice. One day, people will smile without reason. Even in the winter, even in the rain.